guests, Senator Seekins, myself, Senator Stevens from the House, Senator Guttenberg, Senator Coghill, Representative Guttenberg, Representative Coghill, and Representative Harris. Purpose of the conference committee is to work the differences on Senate Bill 130. Senator Seekins.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that the House accept the Senate's version of Senate Bill 130.
Okay.
There's objection. Clerk, call the roll, please.
Senator Guest.
Nay.
Chair Seekins.
Yes.
Seekins.
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg.
No.
Representative Coghill.
No.
Nope.
Yes. So, unfortunately, the motion fails.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Seekins.
Move the Senate accept the House's version of Senate Bill 130.
Thank you. Clerk, call the roll.
There are no objections.
There's, there are no objections.
Right.
Adopted.
Right.
We objected. I said, call the roll.
You did. You didn't object.
I'm the chairman. I said, call the roll.
I didn't hear the objection.
Objected.
She
quiet
objected.
Objection. Not normal for you.
Clerk, call the roll. Hey, I'm quiet.
No.
Yes.
Senator Guest.
No.
Senator Seekins.
No.
Chairman Stevens.
No. So, neither version has been adopted by the conference committee. So the order of business will go through. Does everybody working off the same comparison? We should have 71 items of difference.
Yep.
We'll go through each item. Mr. Seekins will make the motion. And if we can come to agreement rapidly on that item, we'll just make the agreement there. If not, we'll set this item aside and come back to the items that will be debatable. Thank you, Senator.
Yes,
Senator Seekins.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept items 1, 2, and 3, the House version.
Is there objection? Without objection. Excuse me, Senator Guest.
I'm sorry, I'll object to item 2, I believe. Isn't that the deposit?
There's no Senate
deposits
comparison there.
The House didn't have it in the Senate.
House did not have it. Senate had it in, yeah.
We just leave that one open for right now on 2.
2 remains open. Thank you, Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move that we accept the Senate's version on items 4 and 5.
Check.
There is objection. We'll speak to your objection. We'll
object
just leave
item,
it.
Object item 4.
Item 4.
And,
item
and item 5.
Item 4 and item 5. Senator Seekins.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move to accept the House's version on item number 6.
Is there objection? Item 6 will be House.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the Senate versions of items 7, 8, 9.
Check.
Thank you. Senator Seekins.
I move, Mr. Chairman, that we accept the House's versions on 10 and 11.
Without objection.
Chairman, I'd move that we accept the House versions on items number 12 and 13.
Without objection.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the Senate's version on 14.
Object.
There is objection. Item 14 will remain open.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the House version on items 15 and 16.
I'll object.
And, Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the Senate version on number 17.
Without objection.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the House version on item 18, 19, 20, and 21, and 22.
Is there objection? Without objection, all the way through 22 will be House items.
Chairman, I'd move that we accept the Senate's version on items 23, 24, and 25.
Object to
25.
Objection only on 25? So the Senate shall be 23 and 24. 25 should remain open.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the House version on item 26.
I'll object.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the Senate version on item 27.
Seeing no objection, 27 will be Senate.
Object.
There's objection on 27.
Chairman, I'd move that we accept the House version on 28.
Seeing no objection, that will be a House version.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the Senate version on item 29.
29 will remain open.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the House version on items 30.
Without objection, 30 will be a House item.
Mr. Chairman, I move we accept the House version on item 31.
I'll object.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the Senate version on item 32.
Object.
There is objection to 32. 31 and 32 shall remain open.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the House version on 33.
There is no objection. The House will be accepted on 33.
Chairman, I move we accept the Senate version on item 34, 35.
To both?
Yeah.
Chairman, I'd move that we accept the House version on items 33 through 46.
Hold it. We're around 36
35. 36 through.
Wait, I had the minute.
Let's do that. We accept the.
Let's just.
Water cost me so much for.
Okay, 36. House version 36.
36 will be for the House without objection.
House accept, move. We accept House version 37.
Without objection.
Move. We accept the House version on item 38.
Without objection for 38.
Move that we accept the version House version on 39.
Without objection.
Move that we accept the House version on 40.
I'll object.
Move that we accept the House version on 41.
I'll object.
Move that we accept the House version on 42.
42 will be House.
Move that we accept the House version on 43.
I'll object.
Move that we accept the House version on 44.
Be the House.
I move that we accept the House version on 45.
Be the House version.
Move that we accept the House version on 46.
Objection, the House version will be 40, so the three items remain open.
Sorry, which ones remain open, Mr. Chair?
Remain open are items 40, 41, and 43.
Move that we accept the House version on 47.
47 should be a House without objection.
Object.
There's an objection to the House on 47.
Move that we accept the House version on 48.
Without objection.
Move that we accept the Senate version on 49.
Object.
There's objection. 49 should remain open.
Move that we accept the House version on 50.
Thank you. House version shall be accepted on item 50.
Move that we accept the House version on 51.
Object.
51 should remain open.
Move that we accept the House version on 52.
And 52 shall be House. You object to 52,
yep.
Senator Seekins?
Yep.
52 remains open.
I move that we accept the House version on 53.
No objection. It'll be the House version.
I move the House version on 54.
Without objection.
Move we accept the Senate version on 55.
Objection. There's objection on the Senate on 55. Should remain open.
Move that we accept the Senate version on 56.
With no objection to the Senate version.
Move that we accept the Senate version on 57.
No objection. 57 will be Senate version.
I move that we accept the Senate version on 58.
Object.
There's objection. 58 shall remain open.
I move that we accept the Senate version on 59.
Object.
There's objection. 59 shall remain open.
I move that we accept the House version on 60.
Without objection, the House version on 60.
We accept the House version on 61.
House version on 61.
I move that we accept the House version on 62.
Without objection, 62.
I move that we accept the Senate version on 63.
I'll object. Okay.
Move that we accept the Senate version on 64.
It'll be Senate version 64.
Move that we accept the Senate version on 65.
Mr. Chairman, objection on 64.
64 is objected to, should remain open. 65.
65, Senate version.
Object.
Move that we accept the Senate version on 66. Move that we accept the House version on 67.
I'll object.
I move that we accept the House version on 68.
Without objection.
I move that we accept the House version on 69.
Without objection.
I move that we accept the Senate version on 70.
Without objection, the Senate version on 70.
That completes the list, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
About 71.
71, we want to...
Blank. I move we accept the Senate version on 71.
The House version is blank, right?
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Coghill.
There was some open discussion that we might want to keep open on 70. So on that's the effective date.
70?
Yes.
So you want to go back and keep 70 open?
I think
we should. So 70 shall remain open as well.
And
so we go back to...
Never mind.
We'll go back to the first page, begin discussions, and see if we can't work through the ones that remain open.
Mr. Chairman? Thank you,
Senator.
Can I make a suggestion or recommendation that if we can bring somebody up, Paul or somebody up from the administration, to answer questions, and anybody else that we may as a group want to ask questions to about some of these amendments?
I think that's a good suggestion. Mr. Lozanki? And there's enough people, I think, in the audience that could probably help us somewhere else along. Would you like company, Mr. Lozanki, or would you like to, can you handle it on your own?
Everybody loves company, Mr. Lozanki.
So we'll start with item number two. There was objection to the item number two.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the House version of item number two.
Motion was made to accept the House version on item number two. Is there discussion?
I'll object for discussion purposes. Paul, I was trying to remember this provision from the Senate bill. Can you go over it again for me?
For the record, I'm Paul F. Lasanke, Director of the Division of Workers' Compensation and Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Item number two?
Yes.
Section two, collateralization of deposits?
Yes.
I'd like some company.
It's Hall. Thank you. For the record, Linda Hall, Director of the Division of Insurance. Section 2,
I have asked to have deleted in this version of the bill. There are some technical problems with it, with reinsurance, and we have asked that that not be in the bill until we have, in a subsequent year, the available information to do it in a way that's workable.
Mr. Chair, I'll remove my objection.
Thank you. Is there further objection to number two from the House version? Seeing none, number two shall be the House section. That brings us to the next open item, number four.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept the House version of item number four.
And I'll object. There is page section five, page four of the Senate version. The intent language. Mr. Lozenki, would you want to fill us in for the need for this in this in the Senate version?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. I believe that this section only deals with intent language. Most of it already has been adopted by the legislature in previous iterations and changes of the Workers' Compensation Act. But this would be the first time that it's actually codified.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Seekins.
It's been pretty much the common practice in the Judiciary Committee. If there has not been some overriding reason to have finding or intents in the legislation, that we eliminate it. And I don't recall any discussion as to why. If it remained in a Senate version, it was because Senator Terrio wasn't in the Judiciary Committee.
I would agree with that, but Senator Terrio always would have more objection to Section 1 on page 2 because he has the uncodified section of legislative intent.
Correct.
And this is different. This is codified law of the intent of the legislature.
Right. That's probably true. That is a difference. So I don't have a problem with the intent being in the version as codified law. You're right. You're correct. Is there some particular provision of the findings or intent that are objectionable?
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think it was just we didn't feel there was any reason to have it in the bill, and why clutter up the bill with something we didn't need to have in there. So.
But maybe is there further reasoning, Mr. Lozenki, why you wanted to have the intent codified?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of any particular reason that cried out for this.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Coghill.
Is there a difference between construction language certainly has a huge court appeal? The intent language certainly tells us, is this construction language meant to be a guiding principle for courts or for what other reason would this construction language be in there? As I know, construction language is the front door, I think, to the reasons for these statutes, and maybe somebody in the Senate side could help me understand why that's necessary. And, I'm open to it, but I just passed a bill out the other day that had some construction language in it that I fought very hard to keep in there. So maybe there's some reason for that.
Well, I think that in terms of the intent language, if you look at number three in the Senate section, the Senate version on page 24, line 24, page 4, it says it may not be construed by the courts in favor of a party. I think that number four is really the meaning of why they want to codify it. It says hearings and cases shall be impartial and fair to all parties, and all parties should be afforded the due process and the opportunity to be heard for their arguments and evidence fairly considered. So I think that they do want to have that codified.
Mr. Chairman, no disrespect, but I think that would be true of any proceeding that a court or panel would find. So unless it's constructing something different, that is particular or specific to workers' comp, I have really no reason to vote to keep it in.
I go back to pardon me, Mr. Guttenberg, but number one, you know, is to ensure quick and efficient and fair and predictable delivery of the indemnity and the medical benefits. I think that, in my mind, it does, if you go up to line 19, I mean, it was put in for a purpose to be codified, to say that we want to take action, we want to be fair and quick and impartial. So,
Mr. Chairman?
I would maintain my objection. Mr. Guttenberg?
Perhaps, you know, number two, line 22 says workers' compensation shall be decided on their merits, except where otherwise provided by statute. Where is it provided in statute that it not be on its merits?
I don't know. Do you have an example?
Well, Professor Ms. Lizansky could answer that.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I'm not precisely sure, but I would expect that perhaps it's a reference to the fact that there are presumptions that apply in favor of employees, that no one wanted to get crosswise with those existing presumptions in favor of employees.
Well, the difference is you know, number four is the intent. One through three is codified already. Number four is the intent that it should be impartial, fair. We need to go on the next one. Is there any more discussion on the motion that section four to be a House item? I maintain my objection. Is there further discussion?
I think it's pretty fair, Mr. Chairman, that this pretty much mirrors my intent of passing this statute, and if other people don't have that intent, it's all right if they don't want to put it on the record.
So the motion is that the House to adopt the House version of item four. Secretary, call the roll, please.
Senator Guest?
Yes.
Senator Seekins?
And we're adopting which one here?
House.
The House? No.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
Representative Cogdell?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
No. So the House version has been adopted on item four. Next item five.
Mr. Chairman, brief at ease.
Stand at ease.
House version hasn't been adopted. It's got to be a majority of both sides.
Both sides.
Majority of both sides.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
My mistake. I'm moving too fast.
I mean, I'd love to have you do it, but yeah.
I was ready to give that one up, you know?
We could have passed this thing real quick out of here. Boy, I tell you, you'd have fallen for that one.
I'm on to the next one. Okay, Senate version.
Well, Mr. Chairman, since that motion failed to pass, I don't want to leave this thing open. It's not that big a deal, quite frankly. Then I'll move that we adopt the Senate version.
Without objection. We'll go back to a point of order. If the House version fails, it's the Senate version that's accepted.
No. We're in conference here, sir. And we're debating between the two.
We're just moving through the items, line by line.
So the House version wasn't accepted by the conference. Now I move that the Senate version be accepted, and since there was an objection, we will accept the Senate version. So.
They're requesting so us to go at a break so they can turn the sound on. So we'll take a break.
Turn the sound on? We don't want any sound.
I don't know. They want us to go at ease, so we'll go at ease.
We can start if you want.
What do you mean? You don't want to just roll through them, John?
Well, not that one. I didn't want to leave that one open. That one's just
you have bigger things to do than intent language.
All right, Mr. Chairman.
We're back on the record now. We back on now?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Harris.
On item number five, I move that we accept the Senate version plus two panels rather than three.
I'll object for discussion.
We can't, Mr. Chairman, until we get limited free powers, we can't change.
That's true. Yeah. Okay. Nor the motion.
So, I take it from the motion, Representative Harris, will leave five open and skip through.
Five open. Yep.
Skip down through five. Let's go to Let's go to item number six is the House. Item number seven. Item number seven.
Six not objected to?
Not
no.
The first time around. It's the House version. It was accepted.
Okay.
Item number seven. Mr. Seekins.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the Senate version of item number seven.
Check.
There's objection. Can you speak to your objection?
Paul, you want to talk to that? We talked to that earlier.
Section seven, the, pardon me, item seven.
Item seven, section eight on Senate version.
It's the M.
The distinction is that there would not be, that the department would not have permission to contract with a nonprofit organization to represent injured workers who are unable to get private attorneys. Am I correct? That's the item. The purpose behind this proposal is that we've heard from a lot of people who are injured workers that say that they have a lot of trouble getting through our system, and many of them get through without an attorney, but many of them wish to have an attorney. They go to the limited number of private attorneys that are available to represent them, and for whatever reason they're unable to get the assistance of a private attorney. So to try and respond to that concern, what we thought of was to ask for this possibility to get some funding to try and provide kind of seed money to contract with a nonprofit organization that might be willing to do some limited representation and information services for these injured employees who are unable to get private representation. Then the hope would be that if they rendered valuable service and prevailed on claims, that they could be awarded fees, and then it wouldn't be necessary to continue this indefinitely.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, Paul, then in discussions with you earlier, you indicated that you didn't have a problem with the House version. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Yes, through the chair.
Mr. Chair, I'm correct that the House version does not have the provision allowing the department to contract with a nonprofit organization to represent injured workers. That's okay.
The House provision does not have M?
It has M, but M is different than your version of M.
The House version M is the same as the Senate version N.
So the Senate version
has
M, which allows them to contract the nonprofit organization, and the House version does not.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, it's a both of them have the parentheses M, but yours version in your bill is under parentheses N.
We allow them to contract with nonprofit. Yours does not. Is that right?
Correct.
Right. Further discussion?
Just to Mr. Lisinski, what happens the first time somebody does not get an attorney? Are we looking at litigation because they weren't, the department, there wasn't funds for that second attorney if the nonprofit runs out of funding? And they go and they say, where's my attorney? And they say, we can't supply you with one. What happens then? Or do I have this situation wrong, mixed up with
something? No, through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, I think you've anticipated that something that would be a possibility. The contract would have to be configured in a way that would have a limited amount of services available, and it's entirely possible that, you know, that there could be the next person that came in the door and the contract would have been fully performed. And the answer, I guess my direct answer is they'd be where they are today. Trying to represent themselves.
Thank you, Senator Seekins.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lisinski, all this provision would be to say, look, we can't advise you on this, the department, but we can contract with a nonprofit organization that will help you provide information services and legal representation.
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, that's correct. We can certainly give information, but we cannot represent people.
So this is merely an assist to try to help people get representation.
That's correct. It's not intended to replace anything that exists now.
At state expense.
Yes, it would be an additional expense.
Can't see anything wrong with that.
Further discussion?
Chairman?
Thank you.
So, you know, the motion was not to include this, but why would the department itself contract with a nonprofit organization to provide information services and legal representation? Why would the department contract with them? Two employees.
Through the chair, Representative Harris, the intention was to try and come up with a relatively cheap way of trying to address a problem that we were aware of. I mean, we would prefer that.
And maybe what that problem was again?
And the problem being the people talking to us saying that they're unable to get a private attorney to represent them, and they're absolutely convinced that they need an attorney, and many times they're correct. It's a complicated situation. And there isn't anyone currently that represents people in workers' compensation cases other than for hire, if you will.
Public Defender's Office doesn't do that or anything?
No, they do not.
Mr. Chairman, I'd withdraw my motion to accept the Senate version and move to accept the House version without the assistance to the people at state expense.
Object.
There's objection to the... to the motion to remove. There's objection to the motion.
Yes. I thought.
Hold on a second.
Okay. Sorry, what's the motion?
The motion was to remove the motion. He moved to remove his motion to adopt the Senate version. So we're back to a clean slate now.
We have no
motion before us.
Now I will, Mr. Chairman,
on section
to accept the House version, which does not provide someone who needs information and legal representation to be able to get that free from the state.
Object.
There is objection to the motion for the House. We had objection for the motion of the Senate. Do you speak to the objection, please?
Yes, I just, after sitting through with this bill and the discussion with the department, I think it's a needed service at this time. I think we can look and see if it is going to do some good. I think there are a lot of people out there that don't have access to the information and the legal services that they need to help the whole system run smoothly. And I think this actually will help in the end get things to a good final state for all the parties involved.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I'd speak to the fact that I think this was a good suggestion on departments, and I think in the Judiciary Committee we felt that was reasonable and that was helpful to people that could not get that kind of assistance otherwise. But I give it up reluctantly.
Okay. Further discussion on the adoption of Section 7 as a House item. Seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Senator Seekins.
Yes. Under objection.
Representative Harris.
Yes.
Representative Coghill.
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg.
Yes.
Senator Guest.
No.
Chairman Stevens.
No.
Leave it open.
It remains open. Number 8.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we accept the House version Senate version on number 8. I was one line, I was a couple lines down.
Object.
There is objection to to adopt the Senate version. Speak to your objection.
This creates this Workers' Compensation Appeals Commission, and we have some. We have some issues about the way that it's put up, and we believe it's going to need to go to free conference to be able to deal with that. So,
So item 8 will remain open. Item 9.
Chairman, I'd move that we accept the Senate version of item 9.
Checked.
There is objection.
So, yeah.
Item 9 for the Senate version.
Well, I think, Mr. Chairman, I'd just speak to that.
No, Senator Harris, speak to the objection.
Okay.
President Coghill, you understand that more than I do on this one.
I'm catching up with you guys here.
Number 9.
This is the medical benefits, let's see here, section 10. Let's see. This requires board approval. I'm sorry. This is the one that requires board approval.
Board approval, so it's tied to number 8.
That's also maybe Paul could address that too, because I think you wanted to have some approval to do it yourself, right?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Harris, this is the distinction between the two proposals that are in the two bills. In the Senate bill, if someone is represented by an attorney licensed in the state of Alaska, they can reach a settlement of their dispute, and they do not have to have it approved by the Workers' Compensation Board, the current board, not the new commission, unless they are a minor or they have a mental incompetency. The difference in the House version is, in addition to minors and people who are incompetent mentally and people who do not have an attorney, even if you have an attorney, if you are seeking to waive one specific type of benefit, and that is future medical benefits, then you would still have to go to the Workers' Compensation Board for approval of your settlement that you had reached with the assistance of your attorney.
And Mr. Chairman, I believe that someone who's represented by their attorney should have the right to stipulate anytime they want to. I think anybody should be able to stipulate whenever they want to. But when we've already built into it the safeguard of having an attorney for that person, it seems to me this is one of those, well, the state needs to watch out for you even if you have your own attorney, and so we now need to take one more step to make sure that you know what you're doing. Well, you know, we allow stipulation at every other level in the court systems. This is the only place that I know of in our statutes where we don't allow someone to stipulate with the advice of an attorney, other than, I think, structured settlements, where it requires a review of the court. That's the only other place that I'm aware of. And so I'm more than willing to trust someone first, trust someone who has their attorney advising them secondly, and not have to put in a third section. In order for them to get what they want, they have to get approval from the board. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Guess.
Although I agree with Senator Seekins in his intent, I think the reason I believe we should keep it in is because these decisions in the end impact all of the healthcare system and therefore all of us. And so there is some public good. It's not just an individual decision. If that decision is the wrong one, that person ends up in an emergency room or another situation, and we all end up paying for it. So I think in this case, although I agree with people's individual decisions, this individual decision could impact the rest of us and kind of the healthcare structure. So I think it's not the worst thing in the world, and it would be beneficial to the system for it to be reviewed. It's a pretty major decision to waive all future medical benefits.
And I guess I just agree, just because I think, Mr. Chairman, that a person should be able to get what they want without having to go and ask permission from somebody else, especially when they've been adequately represented by legal counsel.
Further discussion on the adoption of the Senate version on number 9?
Oh, was the motion to adopt the Senate version?
The motion was to adopt the Senate version, I think. That's what I wrote down. On number 9.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah. Further discussion? Seeing none, clerk?
Just a second, brief it.
Hold on.
Brief it.
as an open question as debatable, because the board...
Brother, I just hate Big Brother. I have to go ask, pretty please, mommy?
Well, when we're saying that hospitals have to be...
But they've got their lawyer.
They've got their lawyer. This is that they can...
Well, I think lawyers are very valuable.
We were debating.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We're under discussion of the adoption of the...
I remove my objection.
The objection's been removed. Therefore, the Senate section has been adopted on item 9. Next open item is item 14.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd move the Senate version on item 14.
Object.
Objection.
I'd like to ask a question of Paul, if I can. Paul, in reading the Senate section, is it the case in this section that if someone gets re-injured, they cannot go back and get a relocation benefit? I was unclear when I was rereading that section from our discussions in the Senate.
Through the chair, Senator Guess, if I understand your question correctly, the question is if someone who has qualified for reemployment benefits and opted to accept the new job dislocation benefit and then goes back to work at the same type of employment?
Same type of employment, so they would be excluded under number 2. If they then get injured at that job, are they then eligible for reemployment benefits, or do they continue to be not eligible?
They would not be eligible if they had returned to this similar job in terms of physical requirements.
And they got a new injury?
Well,
that's after they've been through rehabilitation. They decided to go back to the same job.
No, this could be people who did not get retrained, but instead opted not to get retrained, but did go back to a similar job.
Correct. And may I continue?
Go ahead, Senator Guest.
Thank you. And I thought the intent was that if they did that, then they've decided not to take the reemployment benefit, so they shouldn't be eligible for the reemployment benefit. But now I guess the question is, they go back to the job, they get injured again, maybe a different injury. Can they then, are they still excluded from the reemployment benefit?
Through the chair, Senator Guest, it's my understanding that they would be. Not they would be excluded.
So if they return to that job, they're permanently excluded regardless what happens to them.
Am I misstating?
This is
let me see if I can understand this correctly. There's a missing step. Employee's injured.
Mm-hmm.
It's the
he declines development of a reemployment benefits plan, mm-hmm. and he received a job dislocation benefit. Said, I can no longer do this job, so I'm accepting this job dislocation benefit.
Now, I might be able to clear this up real quick. This is eligibility to the second injury fund, so that the access comes under the second injury fund.
With respect, Mr. Chairman, no, it's not.
No.
But you're right. Rehabilitation of injured workers. My fault.
But if he never took the job dislocation benefit, he doesn't take the job dislocation benefit and goes back to the same job, then he's eligible for reemployment benefits. Yes. If he doesn't take...
Yes.
The job dislocation benefit. So it says, we trained you that you didn't have to do this job anymore, and you went back to it and got hurt again. Isn't that what it is?
Let me try and clarify my own thinking on this through the chair, Senator Seekins. Currently, under the Act as we have it, if you accept retraining benefits, which is anticipating, which is based on the expectation that you could not go back to your present job or similar jobs, if you accept those benefits and you go back, notwithstanding the fact, you go back and you get hurt, then you are not eligible for additional retraining benefits. Now, this proposal is to mirror that for the situation of people who do not accept the retraining, but based on that same eligibility, accept this new job dislocation benefit.
Right.
So it is true currently and in the future that if you do not accept any kind of retraining benefit, you can go back to any job you want. And then if you get hurt, start from scratch.
And that's kind of what I was thinking, is because we're saying, okay, we're going to retrain you to do something so you don't have to do this job anymore. And we've paid them to not to do that job anymore. Then they go back to that job and get hurt again, and when we've already determined that they shouldn't be doing that job.
At a minimum, the qualification for the retraining was based on the premise that they shouldn't be doing it, or they can't do it.
Mr. Chairman.
That's all this does, I think.
Thank you. Mr. Coghill?
I think probably part of the concern was, and maybe Paul can help us answer that, part of the concern was, okay, you get injured, and you, let's just say you go through job dislocation benefit, and they had determined that you couldn't perform at that point. But what if 10 years later you're healed up and you find yourself back in the same type of employment and get injured again? And I think that was a concern that we were struggling with, and how do we craft this language that says, okay, we don't want you to go through a kind of a revolving door on reemployment benefits, but we also don't want to stop you from excelling. And so I think that was the question in some of our discussion in the House.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Senator.
Maybe free, limited free is the right place for that, because I would say if the person got some kind of a determination at a later date that they were capable of doing that, that's one thing. But just going back to it when they've already been, we've received benefits of the state not to do that type of work anymore, then I don't have that greater concern.
Right, and Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to, maybe Paul could give us some comfort on that, because I know that the next item, 15, goes through the same thing, and it may be that we have language in there that says we don't want you going through a revolving door, but if you have found yourself whole after X amount of time, or, I mean, is there a benefit there to coming back later for reemployment benefits?
Representative Coghill, through the chair, I think you point out something that could be an interesting circumstance that is very hard to predict. I would certainly point out that under the current authority, and as it would continue, the eligibility for the retraining benefit, if I can use that phrase, is based on the finding that you are permanently precluded from going back to your current type of work. So you would be basically anticipating whatever person, notwithstanding the reasonable expectation that they could never go back, who somehow physically got better than it. And I'm certainly not going to represent to the committee that that's impossible.
Pretty improbable.
It's structured to not be very, I mean, if it was probable, you'd be ruled out of eligibility. So you've got to start out with the expectation that there's not going to be a lot of people in that boat.
I would only ask, Mr. Chairman, as we go through this, and maybe we need to hold it open, I don't know if there's enough language between the two bills. Obviously, the House doesn't have this section in it. So I don't know. I would be looking for a place in here where there needs to be at least, I think, a safety valve for that. So if we make it permanent, that you can never return to this road again. I just wonder, you know. So I'm
just for discussion. I mean, I 14 and 15 are linked together. So if we can, for a minute, discuss 15, and you go to section 15 in the Senate version, and you can see the change in the statute on page 14, lines 8 through 14. that to me is a pretty dramatic clarification of if the employee decides to, within 30 days, receives administrative notification of eligibility, an employee shall give a written notice under oath to decide whether they were going to either use it for rehabilitation or take the dislocation benefit. So the employee does it willingly and knowingly what they're going to do, as Mr. Lozenki said, if they've notified that they're eligible for that benefit. So I think that might help clarify 14 by including 15.
Chairman? Paul, maybe you can explain what is your real intent with 14? I mean, what are you really trying to get at? What is the problem that's out there that you're trying to deal with?
The additional eligibility requirement. I think through the chair, Representative Harris, the concern is that people not accept a benefit that's premised on, we wouldn't give you the benefit in the first place except you needed it, all right? And then you go and you act in a way that's inconsistent with that need. So that's what was in the original authority, is if you got the retraining that was premised on the need for it and then you turned around and went back to the same kind of job and got hurt again, we weren't going to retrain you a second time. So this is just a suggestion that, well, what about people who, we've got a lot of people who are settling those retraining benefits for cash. What if they get something for it? Or what if they now, if there's a new program that has a job dislocation benefit and they do get something that's premised on it and then they go back to the same job? I mean, I don't think anybody would have a problem. You can work at any job you want as long as you don't accept a benefit that's premised on the inability to do that job and then go right back to it.
So, Mr. Chairman, the situation was before that if a person got hurt, they could apply for these reemployment benefits, and or they could be trained in for a different type of job.
Right.
They could get the training for the different kind of job, but then they might go back to work on the same job that they got hurt on, same type of job that they got hurt on before. And I think the statute reads, if I'm not mistaken, it says, or the change is trying to say that return to work in the same or similar occupation in terms of physical demands doesn't mean the same exact type of same exact job. In other words, maybe a bricklayer, but it might be doing something different but requires the same kind of physical skills to do that job. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct, Representative Harris.
Okay, and so then what you're saying is that if they get this retraining to do a different type of job and they go back to the old job that they got hurt on, then they're susceptible to getting re-injured over again, because it's the same type of physical demand on their body, correct? And you don't want to leave that
would be reasonable
situation there. You're trying to keep that from happening.
And the only penalty is, Mr. Chairman, we won't retrain them a second time.
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, that's correct. That's the
part. Already retrained them once. We just won't retrain them a second time.
Mr. Chairman, and I tend to agree with that. I think that is a wise choice to do, and I guess I was just wondering if there's any way that you couldn't go back and travel that road again. I mean, you know, one time rehabilitation, and yet I guess it would have to be a determination that they could never do that physically again before. I mean, That's one problem. The other problem is, okay, let's just say you go from bricklayer, where you say you blew a knee out, and then you go to a desk job where you get carpal tunnel. That does that mean you couldn't retrain again? And I guess maybe we should ask that too.
Through the chair, Representative Cockhill. No, in the latter scenario, since it is very dissimilar in terms of the physical demands, it wouldn't trigger this provision.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. These are lifetime denials. I mean, once you've taken the benefit, and you're in 15 or 20 years later, because it says no, at the time of the medical stability, no permanent impairment is identified or expected. If you go off someplace and do something and then come back and that's the only job you've got in your community 15 or 20 years later, and the same and similar injury happens, you're denied. This is a lifetime denial.
Through the chair, as I understand it, Representative Guttenberg, it would apply to you without reservation in the future should you go back eventually to similar work, physically similar work.
So if I may, Mr. Chair, I think it was in Representative Coghill's term, if you were a bricklayer and got retrained, but there are things significantly similar to bricklayers, which are different levels of technical achievement, like going from a hod carrier to a bricklayer, you would be trained at a higher level, but somebody could say it's comparable and deny you and deny the benefit.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, our current reemployment benefits and what is proposed here are all keyed to your physical capabilities and the physical demands of your jobs. It's not keyed to training, whether it's a higher training or not. So if you were someone who had to lift 50 pounds repetitively and you got hurt and you qualified for reemployment benefits or retraining based on a physician's prediction that you could no longer lift 50 pounds repetitively, that would be based on the expectation that would apply across the board. It wouldn't apply differently if you were trained to a different job. It just focuses on your physical capabilities, and then it would focus on the physical demands of your job. So if you had to lift 50 pounds, even if you were called a division director, that would be a physically similar job, and that's what would be triggered by this.
Okay, just one more. So if I was a laying pipe out down here on Seward, and I injured myself lifting 35-pound fitting, and I became a Xerox technician, and I injured myself lifting a 35-pound box of paper, would that be considered the same?
Through the chair, I believe it might not be, based on the general sense of what you normally have to do in that job.
Senator Seekins.
Mr. Lasanki, let me try to get back to not the what ifs, but before. Will this person who accepts, or at this point in this equation, previously declined the development of a reemployment, received a job dislocation benefit under G2 of this section, would that person have already at that point have received somewhere in the process a permanent partial impairment rating?
They may or may not have already gotten their rating at any given time.
But they have been told by someone that they have a permanent partial impairment of some kind.
It's Senator Seekins, through the chair, eligibility is conditioned on an expert giving you a reasonable prediction that will be the case.
So they would not unknowingly return to the job that had this damage. They would have been told somewhere in this process by a physician who examined them and evaluated them and rated them that they are 70% partially disabled and they should not do this kind of physical work.
Through the chair, Senator Seekins, I would put it a slightly different way, but since they would have to prove that to continue to get the benefit, someone would have to tell them or they wouldn't even be eligible.
All right. And see, there's where my problem comes in, is that we say you've gone through the system, someone has told you you're permanently partially disabled, impaired, you can't go back to this kind of a job, and we're going to retrain you for this kind of a job, and then they knowingly go back to the job again. At that point, I think the state's obligation to retrain them a second time should go away.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Guess.
Thank you. I think that the bigger issue for me from 14 is really on 15. I mean, they go together, and that's the job dislocation benefit. Is that paying someone out instead of retraining them. And, you know, these are reservations that I spoke about in committee, and I continue to have about someone making a decision, having no ability to go back on maybe a poor decision to get a cash benefit. They might be in a very difficult financial situation for short-term needs, take a dislocation benefit instead of retraining. And so for me on 14, it's because it's tied to 15, and I still disagree with having this type of job dislocation benefit.
I just might point out that it's the individuals has the election to use either the reemployment benefit or accept the job dislocation benefit. So it's the choice of the injured worker to accept the cash benefit or to accept the employment benefit, the reemployment benefit. The question has been called on items 14, and since item 14 and 15 are tied together,
14 accepts the Senate and 15 would accept the Houses the way we did it the first time around. But I moved for 14 on the Senate.
Let's do 14 then and then do 15.
You want to link them together? The motion for 14 is on the Senate. Is the objection still maintained to the adoption of the Senate version of 14?
Yes.
Clerk will call the roll.
No.
Representative Coghill?
No.
Representative
Detmer?
No.
Senator Guest?
No.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Chairman Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman,
since 14 remains open.
Mr. Chairman, I've moved the House version on 15.
The motion to move on the House version on 15, is there a debate?
Objection.
Would object?
No objection, I said.
I'll object.
Oh, you were wrong. I'm sorry.
There was objection to the adoption of the House.
That provision in there.
Madam Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Coghill?
Yes.
Senator Gettberg?
Yes.
Senator Guest?
Yes.
Senator Seekins?
No.
Representative Harris?
Yes.
No. Item 15 will remain open.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the Senate version on item 16.
Senate version item 16 has been moved. Seeing no objection, Senate version is adopted. Next open item be on my sheet be item number 25.
Move the Senate version of 25.
The motion is to adopt the Senate version on item 25.
Objection.
There is objection.
Mr. Chairman, I think at least on our side, we need to have different powers than we have to accept this version. So,
excuse me.
We need different powers than we have now.
That's a debatable item, then.
Yeah.
You're asking for that to remain open?
Yeah.
26 remains open.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move 26, the House version.
The House version has been moved for 26. No objection. 26 will be House.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the House version on Senate version on 27.
Adopted the Senate version of 27. Is there objection?
Yes.
There is objection. Will you speak to the objection?
Concern about the limited palliative care. Not understanding why should there be any limit to palliative care during a that kind of care that would allow an employee to continue functioning. Chronic pain, debilitating pain or otherwise. It seems like it would be a natural to not have a limit of that.
Chairman?
Senator Seekins?
We had quite a debate on this in the Senate Judiciary Committee. And the intent here is it says that we're going to limit palliative care unless it is needed to enable employee to continue in the employee's employment or to participate in vocal vocational rehabilitation, or to treat chronic debilitating pain. What we're limiting here is, well, it feels good, and so I'd like to have it. Unless there's some real reason to ask for palliative care, the state shouldn't have to pay for it. And we understand that you can be uncomfortable, but being uncomfortable and being able to go to the massage therapist twice a week is not really a state responsibility. But being having to be treated for chronic debilitating pain is, I think, in this situation, it is insurance responsibility. And or to try to, if that helps to continue to the employee in employment, I think that's a good reason. But I just believe we're trying to raise the level to the point where palliative care, meaning, oh, it feels good, shouldn't be a responsibility of the system.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Guest.
Thank you. I actually agree with the intent of the Senate Judiciary, but I think at this time we shouldn't accept this section. I think given that we're going to have a task force and a medical review committee this interim, that this is the exact type of thing that I want to ensure that we do right. Not that Senate Judiciary doesn't do great work, of course, being a member. But I am concerned that I agree with the intent of where we're going in Judiciary, but I think we need to ensure that we do it correctly.
One more thing I might say, Mr. Chairman. This is not a new idea. This is very closely patterned after Oregon statutes.
Mr. Chairman, just if I can follow up. Perhaps if it wasn't, not that it feels good, but that it doesn't hurt any longer. But one of the things we heard on this issue on palliative care is it becomes an argument between opposing attorneys and opposing doctors. And it becomes one of those big legal battles that you're a specialist against mine. One of the things you constantly hear at home from people calling up to talk about workers' comp and their claims is the battling attorneys on values and or the doctors or the specialists or whoever it is. That's what I'm concerned about. That's where my focus is, in trying to figure out what that is. And as Senator Guest pointed out, there is a task force in place that will come back in about a year and give us an evaluation of what that is, hopefully.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Harris.
Paul, is the main reason to have this in here to try and keep people from in rehabilitation, continuing to rehabilitate basically after they've been rehabilitated? In other words, to in some cases for certain medical folks to be able to keep offering that medical care and being paid for it even though it's not necessary for the person to go back to work?
Through the chair, Representative Harris, yes, that is one of the specific reasons why you would be unable to get this care, is that it was getting you back to work, or keeping you on the job is something that certainly we want to promote.
So, Mr. Chairman, if the care was needed to keep you on the job, would that qualify under this provisions? In other words, if you needed to have, say, see a chiropractor on a somewhat regular basis, you could still work, but you needed to go see the chiropractor periodically, would that be covered under this?
Chair, Representative Harris, I believe it would, because that would come under the qualification of enabling you to continue in your employment.
So it isn't too restrictive, but it is if you were just seeing a doctor for a medical person for something that you believed and you had a sort of a working relationship with that care provider. I understand that's probably a fraud issue that would be brought up. Is that competitive in this piece of legislation or in the statutes with fraud?
Through the chair, Representative Harris, I think you'd be have to be cautious about defining something as fraud. I think that there are certainly types of medical of healthcare modalities that can make you feel better. They can't make you feel better indefinitely. And so you may choose to spend your money to get them to feel better for a period of time. But I guess the question is, at a time when medical and healthcare costs are really burdening our system, if you were going to make any restrictions on medical or healthcare at all, what would have the least impact on people's capability of working? And I think that's why it was couched in the terms that it is, that if it enables you to continue working, then fine. If it enables you to get to continue in a retraining plan and you can't go back to work unless you complete that plan, then fine again. And if you're in such terrible pain that it would be, you know, ongoing constantly and debilitating, the kind of pain that I'm sure some of you have heard from your constituents say, that it feels like a hot knife or a hot needle and they can't sleep and you can't eat and you can't think, that would also be covered. So this would be if you were going to have a limitation on medical benefits at all, this would be one of the least.
Oh, I'm sorry. Pardon me, Mr. Lozenki. Representative Harris, Senator Seekins?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think all a person's got to do is go to their attending physician and say this is necessary for other reasons other than just to feel good. There's got to be some reason for the continuing, repeated care that are multiple treatments of a similar nature. If you're just getting multiple treatments of a similar nature, there has to be some point where we have to say, this is absolutely a necessary thing. It requires a physician certifying that they can continue. We are just trying to eliminate the feel good versus the necessary.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Coghill.
I tend to agree with this, but I also struggle with the dueling docs thing. In order for us to understand this better, I think the standard for continuing employment is probably be pretty easy to meet. I don't know that there would be a whole lot of dueling docs there, because you're looking at an employee's request that is going to give him some comfort to be able to continue working in. That would also probably be a fairly easy standard for continuing to participate in reemployment. Probably where you're going to have the biggest dueling docs thing is in your treating chronic debilitating pain, I would guess, because that's probably where it probably gets a little more subjective. So can you help me understand where we might end up having the dueling docs type scenario where they want a doctor comes in and says, look, I certify that the treatment is needed to treat this chronic debilitating pain, where somebody might challenge that and how it might be challenged?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, I think in that scenario the challenge might come if someone was aware of your medical condition. Say, I'm assuming your insurance company would be paying for your medical care. And if they had a condition, if you had a condition, the injured person had a condition that it didn't, in their minds, correspond with chronic debilitating pain for most people. And I wouldn't want to get too much more specific than that. Then, under the Act currently, they are entitled to ask you to go to an independent medical examination. And so typically I would see them asking that independent medical examiner to confirm, is this condition really something that would cause chronic debilitating pain? That would be the kind of duel that you could get into there.
Senator Seekins.
Okay. Now, we allow them to have their choice of attending physician under the statute.
Through the chair, that's correct.
So now, let me step through this section. On line 11, it says that unless the 10-11, unless the employee's attending physician certifies that the palliative care treatment is required. But down farther, palliative care or treatment, now we're getting into line 14, is also subject to requirements, so if the palliative care or treatment involves continuing in multiple treatments of a similar nature. In other words, at that point, if it's a multiple treatment of a similar nature, then they can ask for another opinion to see if that palliative care reaches the standard that the employee's attending physician has certified earlier. So it's just, I think it's just a check and a balance so that, and in most cases, unless it's a similar treatment of or multiple treatment of a similar nature, it's simply a certification by the physician that the employee selected, if I read that statute correctly.
Further discussion?
If you have different opinions, what happens then? If you have
we're going to vote on this 27. Okay. Clerk, call the roll, please. A motion to adopt the Senate version.
Has been moved.
Senator Seacon?
Yes.
Representative Harris?
A no right now.
Representative Cox?
Yes.
Representative Denver?
No.
Senator Gets?
No.
Chair Stevens?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I...
Hold on, Mr. Oh, hold
me.
On. We're going to go back to the floor.
Okay.
This meeting's adjourned till 1 p.m. tomorrow.
Hey, John, on that one, all we wanted to do.
It's one of the things that's like, how do we get away?
Ring the bells. I just be here all night. You can't get anything done. Like everything else dies. We sit here for 4 hours waiting.
All right, I like
we got to get the job done.
Maybe we should just go through it and get to limited free as quick as we can.
There were things that were.